I'm Kelly Cervantes, and this is Seizing Life. Lauren Scherrero is the co-founder of the Nora Project, a nonprofit created to spark friendships between students and their peers with disabilities. The organization's flagship program is currently in 85 classrooms across 4 states. I am so excited to have you here today, Lauren, and to chat all things Nora Project and empathy. So to start things off, what inspired you to create the Nora Project?
Well, I didn't create it, my cousin did, and I'll tell you all about that, but it has certainly become an inspiration for me. So my daughter Nora was born prematurely and had a series of surgeries in her first year of life. And at first they were, you know, GI surgeries, and there were complications, but we expected her to, you know, recover and live a fairly normal life. And then when she was 9 months old, there were complications with one of her surgeries that actually caused epilepsy, caused brain damage, which in turn caused seizures. And after that surgery, there was a brain scan, and the doctor sort of drew straws to come in and tell us what the MRI looked like. And when they came in at 9:30 at night, they showed us an image of a brain that was very significantly damaged. And that was when the doctor said, you know, not only do we not know if she's going to live through this, but if she does, we have, you know, no way of prognosticating what her abilities will be, if she'll be able to walk or talk or take care of herself. And, you know, like my knees buckled. I know you've had those moments. And I couldn't imagine, I never really thought we would lose her. I don't know why I never entertained that, but I didn't. But I couldn't imagine her life. I was starting to, you know, try to imagine her childhood, and it was like a blur to me. And I think I realized in that moment I had never been friends with a child with disabilities or differences like the ones that my child was going to have. And I wanted her to have a joyful childhood. And I, in the immediate aftermath of that conversation with the doctor, I excused myself and called my cousin, who was a fifth grade teacher at the time. And she said, you know, what can I do? Can my students do something? Can we raise money? And we fundraised for CURE while we were in the PICU for a couple months. But what I said to her at the time was, you know, I don't know if we're gonna be able to find something that's gonna change Nora's outcome, but I do want her to have friends. So teach your students to be nice to kids like Nora. That's all I could ever ask for. So my cousin actually went off and developed what has become the Nora Project in that year. And so that was in April. And so she spent the summer working on what the curriculum would be. And then in September, she and a bunch of teachers at her school launched it. And throughout that year, Nora was in and out of the hospital. And so I was hearing from my cousin about how things were going. And it was sort of this bright spot in our lives. We had no control over, you know, how Nora was doing, but we had this sort of like, you know, mission that she was inspiring that we were hearing about all the time. And so right before her second birthday, my cousin invited us to come see the Capstone Project, like these documentaries that her students had created. And when we saw it, we kind of looked at each other and thought, maybe this is what it was all for. We saw there was a real opportunity to teach kids about differences, to teach them how to be, you know, compassionately curious about people who are different from them, and that's sort of where this all began. It's been 3 years, and now the project is grown, and we're moving forward with it.
I'm so inspired by your story. You went through this incredibly emotional journey. Nora was not supposed to be disabled. That was not what you saw, but you were able to take that experience and turn it into something that benefits all of our children. And I just think it's just so incredibly beautiful. You were a lawyer, mm-hmm. and you left that to sort of help organize and run the Nora Project. Why make this change? What is it about this project that, you know, you jump from, you know, being a lawyer to running a nonprofit?
You know, I went to law school and I became a lawyer because I wanted to help people. It was always what I wanted to do, and I think I did that. I practiced for 7 years as a litigator and then as a law clerk, and I believe in our justice system and I enjoy being an advocate. But life has taken me sort of down a different path. And when I was deciding whether or not to move away from the law and toward the Nora Project, I had a conversation with the judge that I was working with. And I said, I think instead of, you know, going back after my clerkship into practice, I might leave law and do this. And he said, you know, you might not be the lawyer you thought you were going to be, but you have an amazing kid and she's given you an amazing opportunity. And he was right. I feel like I can do a lot of good. I feel like there's a major shift that needs to happen. And if I can play a small part in that, in the way we talk about disability and treat people with disabilities and include people with disabilities in school and in life, I mean, I can't imagine a, you know, a more fulfilling way to live my life. And so I am very, very excited to wake up every morning and work on this.
So explain what it is exactly that the Nora Project does. Sure. How does it spark these friendships? How do you teach empathy?
One of the really cool things about empathy is that it's not hard to teach. That we're all hardwired to care about each other, but we just need to kind of practice caring, and it's something that isn't frequently done. So the flagship program, the program my cousin created, we've revised and I think improved as we've gone through, but it's essentially four phases. In the first phase of the project, kids study the components of empathy. They study what it means to be a good listener, what it means to help problem solve, what it means to connect with someone, to adapt to their needs, to be a good host. We talk a lot about hospitality and what it means to make someone feel comfortable. And so that's the first 9 weeks. There are four phases, one for each academic quarter. In the second phase, and that's really just reading books, having discussions, doing journal entries. There's some mindfulness exercises that our students do, but none of it is super complicated. In the second phase of the project, kids actually study disability, which is so important because it's misunderstood and confusing and can be scary if it's not explained. But obviously, as you know, it's not scary. I mean, we're all just humans that have different needs. And so in the second phase of the project, students study adaptive equipment. They study the best way to talk about disability and to think about disability. And that is the time when they're actually introduced to a new friend with a disability. And so the kids make introductions first by video, and then the students host their friends in their classroom. They plan an activity and host them. And those activity days continue throughout the year. The third phase of the project is about storytelling. Because as you know, as you so beautifully have shared your story with the world, the way we connect and the way we really learn about each other and support each other is through our stories and who we are. And so we ask all of our students, including our Nora friends, if someone were to tell a story about you, you know, what would it be? What are the defining moments in your lives? And they explore that in journal entries, and then they start to ask each other, you know, tell me your story, and to really explore that with one another. And in the final phase of the project, they share their combined stories by creating documentaries about the friendships they've created. So empathy isn't something that there's a specific structure for to teach, but it's something that by being curious about another person, exploring that curiosity, wanting to connect and making connections, you cultivate. Mm-hmm. And that's really all it is. So it's simple, but it needs to be practiced. And so that's how we do it. That's our flagship program. Next year, we're going to be launching some exciting new empathy programs. But that is the program that's currently in our 85 classrooms right now.
You know, disability is such a broad term, mm-hmm. but, you know, how many kids in that classroom have a learning disability? Or maybe, you know, they have a hearing aid, or there's certain things that maybe aren't as obvious a disability as perhaps are with your Nora or with my Adelaide, that these kids now also feel more comfortable sharing their own piece.
So, absolutely.
You know, beyond helping them to see a Nora or an Adelaide and not be afraid of them, not, you know how to ask appropriate questions and smile and just be their friend.
Yeah.
They also grow more comfortable with their own uniqueness.
Absolutely. We have so many amazing stories about kids sharing their differences. We had a teacher tell us last year that she had a child who was fully included, fully mainstream in her class, who had an Asperger's diagnosis. And he had never shared with his peers that he had a disability. And during one of their Nora Project discussions, he raised his hand and he told his classmates very proudly about his diagnosis and used it as an opportunity to educate them. And it is great. We're empowering kids to feel proud of who they are because they're, you know, we're all different from one another and we all have things that make us feel different. And if we can just share them and see that they're accepted, it's a good feeling.
Absolutely. So what are the responses that you receive from the parents, both of the able-bodied and minded mainstream kids as well as the Nora friends?
I mean, the responses have been really exciting. I think one of the most common responses we get from parents of typically developing students is that they've learned so much. You know, I mean, we didn't get this kind of education when we were growing up. I didn't know how to approach a person with a disability and how to include them and how to modify play. And so many parents have been grateful that, you know, they're learning through their kids how to, you know, be kinder people and to approach people with differences and to include them. There's one little boy who, he was a four-time Nora friend. He did the project for 4 years. And he was in the same school with his peers from kindergarten on, but he was, you know, in and out of the gen ed classroom. And he had autism and had some behavioral stimming that he would do in order to calm himself in difficult situations. And at the beginning, before the Nora Project, you know, he would sort of leave the room with an aide and she would calm him. And after the Nora Project, his classmates would say, "Sam, do you need a squeeze?" And, you know, they give him a squeeze, a nice firm squeeze to help him calm down. And he didn't have to leave the room to have his stimming behaviors. He could just be part of the class because the kids knew how to deal with it. And so what his mom said was just that, you know, Sam had been included. Sam had been part of the community. But the Nora Project sort of brought it to a new level where he was just one of the kids, you know. Mm-hmm. And the kids really got to know his needs and participate in his, you know, success at school. So that felt great.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. So what would you tell a parent of, you know, a typically able-bodied minded child who doesn't have access to the Nora Project mm-hmm. yet? We'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But what do you tell those parents? How can they talk to their child? What do they tell their child?
Yeah.
How do you teach them to be open and kind and not afraid?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And we're really working on parent resources because we know this is a quality that parents want to instill in their children. We do have some really great free resources on our website now, but I think the main piece of advice, if I could just tell a parent one thing, is allow your kids to be curious. Allow your kids to ask questions. There's nothing wrong with wondering why someone is different, because the answer will assure you that everything is okay. You know, why does Nora scream when she's happy? Because she's super excited and her body's filled with joy and she doesn't have words. And now it's not so annoying when she screams, right? Because you're so thrilled that she's filled
so
with that much emotion.
Cute
she
too.
Is cute. She is cute, but she screams loud. But so once her classmates understand, I went in and spoke with her classmates and, you know, people have questions, and they're legitimate questions because it's not something you see every day. We do have a best practices in inclusion sort of pamphlet. So how to talk about disabilities using person first language. People are not their disabilities are just a part of who they are. So we always like to talk about a person and not about their diagnosis. So we have some lesson plans on that the parents can go through with their children. We have a very simple sort of mnemonic device about how to adapt activities so that they can be, you know, adapted to a child with any developmental level. So the example I always give is if you're doing a cutting activity, you know, think about maybe helping a child tear mm-hmm. so that they don't have to do something different, but they can still do the same sort of art project that the other kids are working on. So we have a whole guide on that on our website. And we also have a disability resource guide that has great videos about different diagnoses that you can share with your kids. And so, you know, if there's a child in their class who has Down syndrome and you want to be able to explain it, you don't have to do a whole bunch of research. We have a bunch of great videos from the National Down Syndrome Society that you can watch. We have pictures of equipment and how it works, so how oxygen equipment works and how trachs work and G-tubes and central lines, so that parents can explain all of these things so their kids aren't nervous when they see them.
So what is the ideal age range that you work with these programs?
So we've been in fourth and fifth grade classrooms the last couple of years. This year, our third year, we're piloting a second and third grade program and also a high school program. Both are going well so far. We're not exactly sure if we'll be offering all three versions next year, but I think we will definitely stick with fourth and fifth grade. High school probably as well. Mm-hmm. Second and third grade's a little young, but we think we have an alternative program that we might be able to offer. But there's no bad age to start talking about differences. And it can certainly be done in different ways at different ages.
So tell me about the impact and the changes that you are seeing in the students that are going through the program.
So that's been one of the most exciting things. We ask our students a bunch of questions. They get a survey three times throughout the year. One of the areas where we saw a lot of growth last year was in how students identified with kids with disabilities. So we asked our students at the beginning of the year to rank on a Likert scale of, you know, from strongly disagree to strongly agree, how they felt about this statement: I have things in common with my peers with disabilities. And at the beginning of the school year, before they had gotten any NORA project instruction, they answered neutral. Like, we had a solid 3 response where they just really weren't sure either way. We asked them again about halfway through the program, but before they had met their NORA friend for the first time. And at that point, they were between neutral and agreeing with that statement that they had things in common. And when we asked them at the very end of the school year, after they had had a chance to really get to know their friend and create a documentary telling their story, they were between agree and strongly agree. So they really felt like they had a lot in common with their peers with disabilities. And that was really impressive movement for us. And we had that in a number of areas. Another question that we loved the data point on was, in 2012, Harvard asked 10,000 teenagers, what's more important to you, personal happiness and achievement or caring for others? And 80% of respondents said their personal happiness and achievement was more important to them. And Harvard called it an empathy crisis and put out this great report about it. So we asked our students the same thing. And by the end of the school year, 80% of our students answered that caring for others was more important to them.
Oh my gosh.
So we had really flipped that statistic on its head, and we felt like we were on to something. We were showing kids that caring for others feels as good as, you know, getting a good grade or
yes,
excelling in your, you know, swim team or whatever, that this is really what life is all about. And so I think it really sort of solidified for us that we're on the right track here with the work.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Thanks.
What are your goals for the NORA project? Where would you love to see it go? What are the outcomes that you would love to get out of it?
Yeah. I mean, our vision is a world where people with disabilities are included in every aspect of life, where they live with dignity and are, you know, part of their communities in an important, significant way. So I think everything that the NORA Project does from here on out will build to that at different stages of life. So we're focused on the next generation right now. We're focused on educating kids about how to be includers. And I think we'll continue to think of new programs that will help advance that goal. But where we see, you know, we hope that the legacy of the NORA Project is just that people are saying hi to one another despite their differences, that they're asking questions, that they're, you know, hiring people with disabilities, including people with disabilities, championing the causes that matter, like Medicaid and Social Security. Mm-hmm. And the people with disabilities live as full lives as they deserve.
So how can people learn more about the NORA Project? You mentioned the website, and how can they explore, you know, it's in 4 different states, so this is not just Illinois-centric.
Right.
How can they bring the NORA Project into their school?
So we will be posting our applications for the next school year on our website, and we are looking for schools that have a really comprehensive approach to inclusion, or at least want to, mm-hmm. And we're happy to help facilitate that. But there's an application process, and we'll be selecting 40 schools for next year. You know, even for schools that aren't ready to take the full plunge into the NORA Project, We are, as I said, going to be offering some new programs for next year. Everything is available on our website, but we'll be offering a literacy program that's read alouds for classrooms featuring characters with disabilities. We're going to be offering a STEM program, Engineering a More Inclusive World, that isn't going to be quite as intensive, but will allow students to think about whether their school is inclusive and how to make it more inclusive. We have sort of two different focuses in terms of community engagement. So the first is to focus on organizations that are doing youth development. So we're trying to partner with Girl Scouts on creating an inclusion patch program. And we're working with the YMCA for inclusion programming and the JCC. So we're any organizations that are working on youth development, we want them to think about inclusion when they're thinking about their programming. At the same time, we're working with organizations that serve people with disabilities. So we've gotten an unbelievable amount of support from Misericordia, which has been so wonderful. They're obviously working with primarily with adults with disabilities, but they also have play groups, and I've made a number of friends, and Nora has made friends through that. And they've just been supportive in terms of helping us think about what the future looks like for people with disabilities. We've also partnered with Best Buddies and other organizations that are similarly minded in terms of their inclusion focus and goals. So there's all different ways to engage the mission. So head to our website, www.thenoraproject.ngo.
And are you on social media?
We are, yes. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. We are constantly posting and reposting great material about including how to talk to your kids, but also the great community events that we're hosting. And we're hosting events here in the Chicago suburbs and in the city, but also in the various states that we're in.
I find the articles that you find and all of that just very beneficial on this complicated special needs parenting journey that we're both on. It's nice to have that resource and to have someone who is culminating all of those articles for us.
Yeah, we're trying to put the best stuff out there for you. Search our
so much appreciated. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming out and for chatting and sharing the Nora Project and empathy. This speaks to my heart and so many others as we just want our babies to be included and to have friends at the very basic of levels. And so thank you for teaching other kids how to be their friends.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thanks, Kelly. Mm-hmm.
Empathy happens when you talk, listen, and learn from those around you. It is the foundation of any community. If you want to be part of the Seizing Life community, we ask that you share this episode with your friends and on social media so more children can receive an education on empathy. Thanks so much.
The opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of CURE. The information contained herein is provided for general information only and does not offer medical advice or recommendations. Individuals should not rely on this information as a substitute for consultations with qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with individual medical conditions and needs. CURE strongly recommends that care and treatment decisions related to epilepsy and any other medical condition be made in consultation with a patient's physician or other qualified healthcare professionals who are familiar with the individual's specific health situation.